Welcome to episode 178 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and my guest is Nikki French, who is, actually, the husband and wife writing team of Nikki Girard and Sean French, whose crime fiction novel, The Lion Room, has just been published. Welcome, Nikki and Sean.
Oh, thank you very much for having us. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here.
To summarize The Lion Room, Niamh Connolly, a married mother of three, her oldest is off to university, or so she hopes, is having an affair. She arrives for an assignation at her lover's pied-à-terre and discovers that he's been murdered. She doesn't call the police. Instead, she thoroughly cleans the apartment, removing every trace of her. And as bad as this morning is, it turns out it's not the worst of it. Am I correct?
That's right. That's right. In fact, just to expand on that, the exact thing you've described, that was the germ. That was the idea that made us get excited about writing the story. We really thought about Niamh arriving in this apartment to meet her lover, finding him dead, and having this choice: does she call the police or not? And of course, if you're a proper good citizen, she'd call the police. But she realizes that to do that would just blow her life apart. So she makes this, in a way, terrible choice. And yes, that sets off a whole chain of things where they get worse and worse through the book.
A cascade of terrible choices. And when we were thinking about it, we've just come out of writing an 8-book series, which was really about an extraordinary woman kind of out in the world. And we wanted to have Niamh as somebody who's a very ordinary woman, who's somebody who does not want to be in a thriller and is not very good at being a detective, which she's forced into being. And we envisaged her as someone who's built up a life for herself, a life as a mother, a life as a wife, a life as an employee, a wife, a life as a good friend. And now all of those things are endangered. And she's fighting, at the beginning of the novel, she's fighting to save that. And then bit by bit, she's actually fighting for her own life and for the life of those she loves the most.
So my first official question is, isn't the subject of marital infidelity an unusual one for a husband and wife writing team? And as you were building the foundation of this novel, that you mentioned that you started with this idea, which is pretty fabulous. You did mention that you're coming off an 8-book series, and this was sort of maybe a palate cleanser or an imagination cleanser. Who threw out this idea? Which of you threw out the idea, and what was the response?
Well, for a start, all of our ideas come out of our conversations, just things we talk at. So it's never quite the right question to say who had the idea. And anyway, when you say it's a strange subject for a couple who are married, in a way, I suppose one of the things we often feel that our subject is about the kind of fragility of ordinary life, about how close ordinary life is to becoming a horror story just with one wrong decision. And I think one of the things in this book is how little — we're not worried about our enemies, it's how little we know about the people we love or about our friends. And so, in a way, I think partly because of being married, we know about how the kind of vulnerability, once you trust someone, you become so vulnerable to them.
Also, we know how hard it is to be married. Everyone who's been married a long time knows that act of love, that pledge that you've made, you just need to remake it day after day and week after week and keep on working at it. And with Niamh and her husband, they've kind of taken their eye off the ball. They've become too used to each other. And so they still love each other, and she still wants to be married to him. But she also has this moment of wanting to be free, not to have to be a good wife, not to have to be a good mother. And most people know that. They know that temptation. They might not give in to it, which is what she did, but they know it.
I think a lot of women especially will sympathize with Niamh. This is a wonderful story of a murder investigation, but it's also a look at both perception and expectation. Neve is described as the glue that keeps her home, her team at work, and her circle of friends together. And so that perception becomes what's expected of her. And reading about what Neve is doing to maintain her household, do her job, and entertain her friends was exhausting. And on top of that, what she's desperate to do is deflect suspicion from herself and those she's loved and those she loves, which you mentioned before, from this terrible murder. Murder is always a terrible thing.
So that is spot on. The way you described it, I mean, when we were thinking of the idea, the character of Neve was completely crucial in this. The character of someone who, as you say, has always been the person who everyone expects to be good, to do well in all her different roles. And she has, up until now, done well. And when we thought about the book, we thought about it both as a kind of cliffhanger psychological thriller, but also it's very domestic. It's about a woman frantically juggling. And by the end, she's not just juggling feeding the guinea pig and getting the children's packed lunches together. She's juggling kind of trying to solve a criminal case in which she is the main suspect.
And I think the character of your detective is, I'm interested, Hitchings. Where did he come from? Because he's a little Columbo-esque, I thought.
You know what you mean. You mean just one more question, ma'am.
That's yes.
I suppose, one of the things we're interested in the fears and stories and thrillers that come out of daily life. So we don't tend to really give a huge emphasis to the police procedural bits of the story. And when we do have police, we like them to be like they're kind of characters really involved in the drama. So I think that what we wanted to do with Hitchings is he's in. You don't quite. I don't want to give too much away, but I think there's a real tension because you just don't quite know why he's interested in Neve. Is it because the obvious reason is he suspects her, or does he like her, or does he, or what, you know? That's it. We wanted to to create a sort of interesting interesting male female dynamic between them.
And I think that's right. But also at the same time, I mean, one of the things that we wanted to do with The Lying Room is, it's quite close to being a nightmarish farce where people are turning up unexpectedly, doors are opening, it's the wrong person standing there. And Hitchings is part of that. He keeps just turning up when he's not expected and definitely not wanted. So he's a figure that kind of looms into view every so often.
I mean, in a way, one of the things we feel is that that often thrillers are quite close to being comedies. It's a bit like with rom-coms, you just give them one twist, and it can be like a nightmarish stalker story. And in this, in a way, this is partly a story of just a middle-aged woman just juggling the chaos of her life and trying to get by with everything going wrong. But with it, we hope making it just really constantly frightening.
Well, I have a feeling you must be able to see my questions because you anticipated the next one, which was, that I thought maybe it was me, but I found parts of this book, I found parts of The Lying Room, for want of a different word, darkly, very darkly funny. And black humor.
We wanted that because we wanted to write a book that is like real domestic noir. So it's like wrong choice after wrong choice, and as Sean says, the kind of cascade of consequences that come from that.
And as you said, also, doors opening, people showing up, hordes of people showing up for dinner when there's no food in the pantry.
People just won't leave. People are in the bath when they shouldn't be in the house at all. Yes.
And also, lots of cleaning.
Also, one of the things about the book is once Neve starts lying, then every time you lie, then you have to add another lie to justify that lie. And it's very, telling lies is quite a complicated business because you have to make sure it all fits together. And so there is a kind of comedy about just trying to, avoid giving yourself away, which he's, constantly on the verge of doing.
And then she's got, she's got the daughter who's off to university, she hopes, who's a bit of, you know, who has had her difficulties. And so that's just another layer of her life that, it, on top of her friends that keep showing up and won't leave, the chief inspector who keeps wanting to talk to her at just totally the wrong moments for her life, she's dealing with this daughter who has issues.
She's dealing with everything, and every time she's trying to deal with one thing behind her back, something else is kind of erupting into chaos. And that's, we wanted to make it thick with event and with feeling. So kind of every few minutes, something else is happening, which blindsides her and, we hope, the reader.
Well, as I mentioned, this book is a standalone, although I could see the detective popping up in subsequent novels. And so, you know, for the past decade, you've been involved in a series about psychotherapist Frida Klein that culminated with Day of the Dead. And this is a question I ask crime fiction writers a lot, especially those who have written series and standalones, to sort of compare and contrast the experience of investing yourself in a multi-book arc, writing a standalone, how you feel about it, and this sort of a roundabout way of saying, what is next for Nikki French?
Well, we can answer both questions. To take the first one, the more difficult one, the experience of writing, you know, that was a real challenge to us because we had written a number of standalones up to then. And when writing a series, it's completely different because, you, in a way, you throw in, you know, so we, ours was always conceived of as an 8-book series. And but even you take this group of people and you put them in the first book. And, no, of course, in our previous books, you get to the end of the book and then you're done with them. But here, you actually find, you then, you return to them in book after book. And also the readers get to know them. So the readers almost become more involved because you're aware of how people have responded to the characters. So it's a little bit, we sometimes think it's a bit like when you invite a party of people from different parts of your life. But you never quite know who'll get on with each other. You know, and some people just stand in the corner and it doesn't work. And others, you know, suddenly you'll find people who didn't know each other getting on wonderfully. I mean, I can give a particular example. In the first book, we had someone who's meant to be a one-off minor character, who's a Ukrainian builder called Joseph, who just actually falls through the roof of the ceiling of Frida's consulting room. And he was just meant to perform a function in that book. But he wouldn't go away. He just stayed for the rest of the series because he somehow got on with all the other characters. And that was just something we could never have planned in advance. So there is that whole dynamic, which becomes very enjoyable. On the other hand, you've got to be careful, again, in a series, about making a decision about a character. Because, you know, if they suddenly have a baby, then you've got to realise they have this baby that's going to be growing up through all the remaining books.
So actually, when we came to write, it was very painful saying goodbye to Frida. But on the other hand, it was also very liberating that we kind of feel we've been born afresh and we're, you know, it's a new Nikki French now. And it's been such fun. And we have, and you talk about the next book. The next book is definitely a standalone. And we know that because we finished it. In fact, we delivered the next book. And it's a book. And all we can say about that book is the idea that we had for it, which we've slightly gone away from, but it remains at the heart of the book, is that a woman has been charged with murder and she's in prison, and from her cell and from inside her own head, she has to work out what happened.
Oh, very Kafka.
Well, not too Kafkaesque, I hope, but it's so it was this idea of solving a crime from within prison.
That sounds, and I have a feeling that will be out in the UK before we're fortunate enough.
Well, no, it won't be.
You see, our publication date in the UK is today, so we're pretty much simultaneous with the US.
So it'll be about.
I think it'll be about the same time, but you know, we don't know exactly.
No, we're just about to go off for our publication party, so I can promise you, it's definitely today.
Well, I have a wonderful time. I mean, thank you for taking the time talking to me. And
busy It's been a great pleasure.
And I look forward to the next book. I have to say, I've been wanting to have you on the podcast, but it's awfully hard to talk to writers in the middle of a series.
That I can quite see that, yes. There's so much backstory and things to kind of catch up with. Well, so we're out of that now.
We're very easy to talk to now.
So you'll be able to come on the podcast next year with your next book.
Anytime you ask us, we'll be there, and that will be lovely.
Well, thank you again, Nikki French, which is, as I mentioned at the beginning, the husband and wife writing team of Nikki Girard and Sean French. Thank you again for being with us, and we look forward to next year and talking about your next book.
It's been great, and many thanks.
Look forward to it.